You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Brick Lane, Monica Ali's debut novel, was about a Bangladeshi woman who moved to London's East End as a result of an arranged marriage. Now, in her second novel, Alan Tejo Blue, Ms. Ali takes a different approach, telling the story of a Portuguese village community as it adapts to a new world. It's published by Scribner, and it brings Monica Ali to my show today. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Bangladeshi women in London are a far cry from Portuguese peasants. Did you intentionally set out to write something so totally different?
Well, actually, it wasn't the book that I was planning to write next. I had a different book in mind. But what happened was I spend a lot of time in Portugal, 3 or 4 months a year, and we go to this region called the Alentejo, which is very rural, very beautiful, rather different to the Algarve, which is where most people know. And I found that even when I was back at my desk in London, I kept getting drawn back there, and I was so fascinated with the life of the village that I couldn't resist writing about it in the end.
Well, to some degree, this book is about a thing that we've seen throughout British literature, and that is Brits going to exotic places, whether it's Italy or Spain or Portugal, and not fitting in very well, not being able to fit in very well.
What's wrong with us? Yeah.
Why go?
Yeah, I think, the place that I spend time is this beautiful little whitewashed, sunbaked village that a lot of Brits and maybe city dwellers here as well dream of escaping to. I mean, judging by the popularity of the TV makeover programs we have, of a new life abroad, and the popularity of the literature as well, so Under a Tuscan Sun and A Year in Provence. But what I wanted to do, and paradoxically through fiction, was to inject a little bit more realism. And I think that the fiction tends to be a tad on the romanticised side, you know, full of quaint little rustic tales about the wild boar getting into the vegetable patch, which is enjoyable, but I think there's more interesting things to think about as well.
Well, we have an interesting situation where one of the locals wants to go to London and be an au pair. She wants to get away. She has these great fantasies of London. And then we have these British people who are escaping London
in
this little town, a town where the locals don't necessarily like to cater to tourists.
Yeah, I think one thing that you picked up on there I had in mind was the way that newcomers would see a place like this as a way of seeking solitude of some kind. Whereas, as you say, one of the characters, Teresa, a young local girl, she dreams of fleeing because in the village, everybody knows everybody else's business. So it's the last place that she can find solitude. So for her and lots of people like her, it's a place to escape from rather than escape to.
What does London represent to her?
It represents an idea of freedom, I think, to her, and of independence. But what some of the expatriates find when they have arrived in this fictional village of Mamarosa in the Portuguese countryside is that although they think that they are escaping from their troubles, they find that somehow their troubles have snuck into the suitcase and arrived with them because you can't run away from yourself.
This is an area where, in the southern plain of Portugal, where cork is one of the main natural resources, and cork prices are falling. I thought that there was a shortage of cork. That's why they're starting to not use it in wine bottles.
I don't think that's the case. I think there's been conflicting propaganda on cork issues. Portuguese cork farmers, people who harvest the bark from the cork oak trees, are finding life very tough at the moment, and particularly because of this increasing use of synthetic corks.
Do you think that the transition that you're showing here, that we have this town with a convenience store and a bar and a new internet cafe that has no working connections?
It does in the end.
But do you think that this is the same sort of thing that we might find in rural villages in other parts of the world, in Greece and India and Brazil? Or is this specifically Portuguese because of the political history of this area?
I mean, I wanted to give it some specific context in the Portuguese context. So at the opening of the book, there's a story of an old man who is dealing with the suicide of a friend and who has lived through some of the worst oppressions of the Salazar regime, the fascist dictatorship. And what he does really is provide a context for the way that newcomers can often project their own fantasies onto a place, as if the place bears no weight of history of its own, as though it's a blank canvas, as it were, which of course can never be the case. But yes, I agree, in some ways, you know, going to the particular is exactly what can make the issues seem universal. So I think there's a bit of both.
Americans are more likely to remember Franco than Salazar. Why do you think so few of us are familiar with that dictatorship? How long was he in power and how repressive was he?
Gosh, I don't know why people don't remember the Salazar regime. I suppose people are more familiar with the Franco regime because of the civil war. That's the only reason I can think of.
But Salazar was before Franco, wasn't he?
Franco is in Spain.
No, I understand. But they do share that same
yeah.
Iberian Peninsula.
Yes, yeah. I don't know why the Salazar regime should have been forgotten so
But was
lightly.
It as bad as Franco's?
There was less domestic strife, I think, is the answer. But it was a very oppressive regime, and it was a dictatorship.
My guest is Monica Ali. Her latest novel, Alentejo Blue, is published by Scribner. You tell the story from many perspectives and through the lives of different people, tourists, expatriates, whole families, first person, third person. Can some of these chapters, in fact, be read as standalone short stories?
Yeah, good question. I think that you could dip into the book almost at any point in one way, because the chapters are separately voiced to a large extent. But, you know, if I had my way and could wave a magic wand, I would love readers to read from the start through to the finish, because I think there's an overall shape to the book. And the reason that it has this structure was dictated by the subject matter. And what I thought I would do initially is use the character who's a writer, Stanton, and take everything from his perspective.
Although he's in third person.
Right. I ended up rejecting that idea in the end, because what I realised was that he was not the driving impetus for the book. The place itself was my driving impetus. So to turn it around, the place is the main character. So to give voice to a place, one has to develop a kind of choral range. So my job was really to inhabit these different perspectives and bring them all to life.
But you also did begin writing with short stories, so I'm sure you feel very comfortable in the form.
Yeah, the short story form is one that I love a great deal. A lot of short story writers like Alice Munro, who I respect and love their writing a great deal too.
At one time, Jay, a member of the English Potts family, reflects on his identity, and there's some confusion as to whether he's English or Portuguese. Should I assume that your own background has led to an interest in the notion that people might have hybrid identities?
Yeah, I think Brick Lane was really a novel of displacement, essentially. And now that I've stepped back from my second book, from Alentejo Blue, I can see that some of my preoccupations are coming through again. So there's displacement here, or disjuncture, social dislocation is coming through. And of course, the village setting in both of the books, because Brick Lane is a kind of an urban village, I think serves to highlight those issues of isolation and dislocation.
And dysfunctional families. If the family in Brick Lane was dysfunctional, I don't know. We have to invent a new word for the Potts family.
Yeah. Well, of course, the most interesting families are the ones that are dysfunctional in some way. They're always the most fun to write about.
Now, it's interesting that the British have been in Portugal for a long time because they have controlled the making and the export of ports for centuries. Are they different British people than the people who come, like Stanton, to get away from England?
Sorry, are who different to the...
I mean, are they like Jay, not really English and not really Portuguese?
The people who are expats over there, you mean?
The ones who've actually done business in Portugal for so long that it's hard to tell whether you should pronounce the names with the English pronunciation or the Portuguese pronunciation. I know the same thing in Spain, where the whole sherry business was totally controlled by the Brits.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't come across those families that the port industry is really based up in the north, Porto, much further north than Lisbon. So it's a very different sort of scene down in the Alentejo.
Now, you said that you hadn't planned to write this book. What had you planned to write?
Oh, well, that's the book that I'm writing now, and it's a great pleasure not to have to talk about it. So take every opportunity not to talk about it. Set in England, though. It's set in London in the north of England.
But a lot of writers have told me that they've done this, that they plan to write one book, another book takes over, and then they return to the previous book, or they find that they can't return to the previous book because they moved to somewhere else.
Right.
Is there a certain split brain thing? Was that one just put on hold, or while you were working on this, was that other thing still bubbling in the back of your head?
No, the other thing was still bubbling all along. And I resisted writing this book for a while because I thought at first, look, I should stick to my plan and, you know, how dare this get in the way? And then I succumbed to the obvious, which is if something's obsessing you, then you should go with the flow. I mean, it's an old saying about writing that you don't choose your material, the material chooses you. And I think that was the case with this book.
Well, a number of critics have expressed a certain disappointment that this book isn't more like Brick Lane. Does that bother you?
I think, you know, my obligation as a writer is to follow my own creative direction, no matter what the external expectations might be. If people are expecting Brick Lane Part 2, then, you know, it's not really my issue. My issue is to follow my own artistic instinct.
And this book is Alentejo Blue. It is published by Scribner's. My great thanks to Monica Ali for coming by and talking about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.